Welcome to Walk in Truth. These are the Bible teachings of Pastor Michael Lance, equipping you to reach out with God's truth to all people and how to apply that truth to today's issues, trends, and culture. Learn more when you visit walkintruth.com. Now here's part two of Pastor Michael's teaching in 2 Samuel 20 called A Kingdom Shaken.
So David did what he could. Notice in verse 3, he placed them under guard. I think that means he tried to protect them. He provided for them. And they needed a lot of care. They needed maybe just a shoulder to cry on. And David was the man that they looked to. So he probably had to spend a lot of time just trying to hear them out and try to do some repair. And I will tell you this, that anybody, and I'm sure this room has people in it, who's ever been through abuse, whether it's this type of abuse or even physical abuse, it's going to take some time to recover. And David, if you could see David in this moment as a type of Jesus Christ, can be there for you even if you've been abused, even if you've been wronged by another individual. And the statistics are pretty scary on how often this happens and how little it's actually talked about. But David went home and he put the ladies under guard. He knew that they needed to feel safe and he provided what they need. He provided them with sustenance. But he was not with them again. And there are some scholars that believe the reason that David wasn't with them again is found in Leviticus 18, 5 through 15, that there was some sort of defilement that went on, and David did not want to break the Levitical law. That's certainly a possibility. His son had been with these women, so that's a possibility. But here's another thought, and this came from another commentary I read this week, that maybe David, upon coming home, decided that he was no longer going to have concubines in his life. Maybe he was thinking twice about the whole idea of a king having a harem and him having multiple women in his life. Maybe he started to think about the fact that God said from the beginning, a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, singular. And the two shall become what? One flesh. Maybe David, after all he had dealt with, and sometimes, look, here's the truth of life. We got to learn most of our lessons the hard way. Right? It would be nice if some of us could say, you know what? That last lesson I learned was so easy. I learned the easy way this time. I had a friend tell me he made this mistake, and I said, I'm never going to make that mistake. Right? But the truth is that we have to learn most of our probably most substantive, deepest lessons in our lives are learned the hard way. And here's the sad reality. These women, verse 3, they were shut up until the day of their death, living as widows. They, the text would indicate, spent the rest of their lives with no man in their lives. They had to live out their days as widows. And that was because of David. That was because David had sinned with Bathsheba, but that was also because David did things outside of God's will. And even though David was forgiven, please hear what I'm about to say very well. Even though you can be forgiven by God, it doesn't mean the aftershock of consequences stops. And even in the light of forgiven sin, and I'll take it a step further, even when you try to make things right after you've sinned, it doesn't mean that everything's just going to be great. Maybe you formulated a plan that, you know, you hear about, okay, bringing sin into the light, or you want to ask for forgiveness. Some years ago, I had a friend tell me that he was confronted with such issues, and so he decided that he would go to his spouse and ask for forgiveness for some past, I'll put it, indiscretions. And he had in his mind how it was going to go. I'm going to go and I'm going to confess, and my spouse is going to be so wonderfully thrilled that I confess this stuff and hold me and say, it's okay, you're forgiven. Oh, it's so brave of you. And that's what he thought until he confessed it. And it didn't go the way he had it in his mind. It was hard for months after that. Because we think, sometimes the motivation for us to do something like that is about us. It's not about the other person.
I got to get this off my chest so that I can be done with this. And so I need you to hear me, right?
Sometimes even in our apologies, we don't have the right motive. And so David had to deal with the reality. And as one author put it, David was not the kind of king who could wipe away their tears. But Jesus is that kind of king. And so even when it looks like, you know, I could go to counselors for the next 10 years and they can't wipe away my tears, but there is a king who can wipe away every tear from your eyes. Amen. He's the stable king. And one day he will wipe away every tear from our eyes. The wrongs that we have done to others and the wrongs done to us were nailed to the cross. That's the kind of king we serve. And the king said to Amasa, verse 4, call out the men of Judah for me within 3 days and be present here yourself. Now, there was something else that David had to deal with. He had to deal with Sheba, who was leading this rebellion. So he had to comfort the ladies. You know, he got home from what he had to deal with. And it wasn't just, I'm going to sit on the throne. I think I'll watch a Dodger game or something. No. He had to go immediately to work. And he called Amasa. And Amasa went out to call the men of Judah. He was the man who had replaced Joab as being the commander of the army, even though Amasa was the commander for the rebellion, but David had forgiven him. But he delayed, verse 5, longer than the set time which he had appointed him. All of a sudden, Amasa wasn't coming back with the troops. It was just a little too much time for Amasa to amass the troops. And so David started getting a little bit worried. This guy had been part of a rebellion before, so maybe David was thinking, did this guy just, is he collecting an army for himself again? What's going on? So David said to Abishai, that's Joab's brother, David's nephew, now Sheba, the son of Bichri, will do us more harm than Absalom. Take your Lord's servants and pursue him, lest he find for himself fortified cities and escape from our sight. David said, we need to deal with this guy, and we need to deal with him now. Titus 1:11 talks about false teachers that must be silenced because they are upsetting or ruining. They are shaking up whole families, teaching things that they should not teach for the sake of sordid gain. Titus 1:11, some people need to be stopped. Some false teachers absolutely need to be silenced because of the damage that they're doing to other people. On Living Truth Radio, or it's now called Walk in Truth this morning, you may have heard it, I was dealing with Jehovah's Witnesses. And sometimes when you deal with a cultic movement, people get mad at you. But I'm willing to risk someone mad at me if they can meet the true Christ. If they can find true hope and not a false hope. And David knew that he had to deal with Sheba because Sheba was trying to draw people away from the kingdom and away from their true king. And he was dangerous. Jesus talked about people who would try to stumble believers, even new believers. He said it would be better for those people if a heavy millstone be wrapped around their neck and they be cast into the depth of the sea. Why would Jesus say that if all roads lead to God? Why would Jesus say that if you can just pick whatever quote-unquote Jesus you want? It really doesn't matter. No, these things are crucial. Jesus said if one of these little ones that believes me is stumbled, here's what should happen to the stumbler. And David says, we got to deal with this guy. So Joab's men went out after him along with the Cherethites, the Pelethites, and all the mighty men, and they went out from Jerusalem to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. Now, I want you to notice, some of the men are called Joab's men. He had led a third, he had commanded a third of the men against Absalom's rebellion. And Joab is still part of the army, but he's been demoted. Why had Absalom been demoted? Or why had Joab been demoted? Because he had killed Absalom. And remember, David was upset, and David said, I want Absalom spared. And Joab killed him, and David was mad. And Joab gave David the business for being mad. He said, you care more about your son who was trying to kill you than you do care about those of us who are trying to protect you. And so Joab's there, And Amasa is supposed to be leading the army, but Joab's men are there. By the way, Amasa means burden bearer. And when they were at the large stone or great stone, it was probably a historic landmark that people knew about, which was in Gibeon, about 5 to 6 miles northwest of Jerusalem, Amasa came to meet them. Now, apparently he had gathered an army, but he was a little tardy. Now, Joab was dressed in his military attire, Joab, the former commander, and over it was a belt with a sword, probably a small dagger, in its sheath fastened at his waist, and he went forward, and it fell out. Now, all of a sudden, Amasa shows up with a group of people he's gathered. He's probably heading back to Jerusalem to get his orders from the king. Probably something like this. Hey, king, I finally got the army together. Maybe he was met with some resistance because of what he had done formerly with Absalom.
You'll hear more from Pastor Michael in a moment.
Did you miss part of today's message? You can always listen again on demand. Catch every teaching from Pastor Michael Lance on the Walk in Truth app or wherever you listen to podcasts. It's an easy way to keep growing in God's Word and stay grounded in biblical truth throughout your week. Just search for Walk in Truth and start listening anytime.
Your financial support helps keep Walk in Truth on the radio, and it also helps us reach people all over the world through the podcast. That means someone driving home from work, someone on a morning walk, or even someone on the other side of the globe can hear the hope of Jesus right when they need it most. And here's the cool part. Every gift helps. Even a small step like becoming a monthly partner for just $5 a month makes a big impact. Think about it. For the price of less than one coffee, you could help keep Bible teaching going out day after day. So would you join us? Head over to walkintruth.com. That's walkintruth.com and become a partner today. And thank you.
We'd love to hear from you. If today's teaching on Walk in Truth encouraged you, challenged you, or raised a question, reach out and let us know. Send your comments, reactions, or questions to contact@walkintruth.com or give us a call at 844-48-TRUTH. Your story and feedback matter, and they help us continue equipping believers to apply God's truth to their daily walk. That's contact@walkintruth.com or 844-48-TRUTH. We look forward to hearing from you.
We'd love to see who's listening, so please connect with us on Facebook or Instagram. Just do a search for Walk in Truth Show. Now, back to Pastor Michael Lance right here on Walk in Truth.
And over it was a belt with a sword, probably a small dagger, in its sheath fastened at his waist, and he went forward, and it fell out. Now, all of a sudden, Amasa shows up with a group of people he's gathered. He's probably heading back to Jerusalem to get his orders from the king. Probably something like this. Hey, king, I finally got the army together. Maybe he was met with some resistance because of what he had done formerly with Absalom. And so they meet at this large stone, and Joab, who's still there and dressed in military attire, he's the former commander, so no love lost between these two guys, right? Here's your replacement standing there. Here's a man who led a rebellion against David, a man you've always been faithful toward, even though you didn't always do things the way David would like. And you see him at this landmark, this large stone. You go walking up, and all of a sudden, if we put it in modern vernacular, your gun falls out of your holster. Now, if you're Amasa, you might be thinking, that's interesting. Well, as he walks up, his sword falls out. And Joab said to Amasa, "Is it well with you, my brother?" This is a Hebrew greeting. It's shalom. We might say it in modern vernacular. "Hey, bro, how you doing?" "Peace, brother." And Joab took Amasa by the beard with his right hand to kiss him. Now, I don't recommend that any of you guys do this. Some of the people who are new to Christianity are just trying to get over the fact that men hug each other. So, we understand. Do not grab them by the beard. That's really, I think this is an ancient Jewish thing that we don't recommend, right? But anyway, but Amasa was not on guard against the sword, which was in Joab's hand. Maybe he just thought, oh, he's just picking it up. And maybe this whole thing was a way for Joab to get the advantage. And so he, Joab, struck him in the belly with it, and this may ruin your donut you want to have afterwards, and poured out his inward parts on the ground, and did not strike him again, and he died. And then Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued Sheba, the son of Bichri. Well, that's a nice greeting. Hey, brother, how you doing? Ooh! And it was over. And he's there now bleeding in the middle of the highway and dead. And some of you are thinking, what is Joab's problem? Exactly. That's what David always wondered about this guy. It seemed like Joab had David's back, but did things the way David didn't want them done. It seems for Joab, the answer was always the sword. And you may have a few friends in your life like this. You got to calm them down every now. Hey, hey, hey. When I first came to the church, we were playing in a Christian softball league. How many of you have ever played in a Christian softball league? Christian softball leagues are not always so Christian. And oftentimes, in the midst of competition, because we know how competition brings out the best in everybody, right? We would have some of our teams who would get a little upset at the umpire. If you've ever tried to be an umpire, you can't please the people. Half of the people are always mad at you, right? And so some of our players would be jumping up and down. That's a terrible call. You got to get out. You need some glasses. And I'd be going, guys, this is a Sunday Christian league. Let's calm it down a little bit, right? Sometimes we just lose who we are. So Joab ends up killing Amasa, and maybe because he felt like Amasa was a traitor. Later in 1 Kings 2, David tells Solomon, he says of Joab that he shed the blood of war in peace. He put the blood of war on his belt and about his waist and on the sandals on his feet. So David says to Solomon, act according to your wisdom, and do not let his gray hair go down to Sheol in peace. 1 Kings 2, 5, and 6. Ultimately, he was held responsible for what he did. Now there stood by him one of Joab's young men, verse 11, and said, whoever favors Joab and whoever is for David, let him follow Joab. Let's get moving, in other words. But Amasa lay wallowing in his blood in the middle of the highway. And when the man saw that all the people stood still, he removed Amasa from the highway into the field and threw a garment over him. When he saw that everyone who came by him stood still. You can imagine, you're one of the soldiers there. You see this meeting taking place. It looks like they're going to have a cup of coffee, and all of a sudden someone is laying there dead. And the people were stunned. And each person, as they were walking by, couldn't help but look at his dead body there in the middle of the street. And so one of the men pulled the body off the highway, put a cover over it, and basically said, if you're on David's side, you need to follow Joab right now. That was a lot of pressure to put on the people. And as soon as he was removed from the highway, all the men passed on after Joab to pursue Sheba, the son of Bichri. Now he, this is Sheba, went through all the tribes of Israel to Abel, even to Beth Makkah. Many of you remember from a previous sermon that Beth Makkah is a Boston way of saying the house of Makkar. I thought that would go over better, but apparently it did. Makkar, my car in Boston, never mind. Anyway. See, people are walking out just because my jokes are horrible. I know you're not doing that, JT. I love you. I'm used to it. It's okay. And so, all the Barites, verse 14, probably another way to say the Bichrites, a clan or the father of Sheba, they were gathered together and also went after him. So he got some sort of following, did this Sheba, this rogue leader, but it seems like he didn't have a whole lot of success. It was just people from his clan. And he went about 100 miles to the north, 25 miles north of the Sea of Galilee. This is the top of the nation of Israel, probably near the base of Mount Hermon. And he set up shop in this place called Beth Makkah. And he tried to entrench himself there. And so here comes the pursuit, and they came and they besieged him at Abel Bethmaachah, and they cast up a mound against the city. This would be a siege mound. This is how ancient warfare took place. They would start using the earth and stuff like that, and they would, if you had a wall, they would start just building this ramp until they could get to you. If you ever get a chance to go to Israel, you can go to the top of a place called Masada. And it's this ancient fortress that was built by King Herod, and it's, you got to go up on a cable car basically to get up there. And the Roman army built a siege ramp all the way up this steep hill to finally get to the people that were up there. And it would take them weeks, months, even years to do it. But in ancient warfare, if you had a wall, this is what they do. They just start the earth and they just start building up a ramp until they finally could get to you. And so they're there. They cast up the mound, verse 15, middle. They stood at its rampart. All the people who were with Joab were wreaking destruction in order to topple the wall. They were beating on the wall. Now, if you're one of the people in the city and Sheba has just come by lately and you're like, all right, what's all the hubbub about? Well, there's some people here mad at Sheba. Now, here's the way sometimes things work. Somebody like Sheba gives a great speech and says, follow me, forget about David, follow me. Prints posters and that kind of thing, right? And people go, yeah, you know what, Sheba's the man, Sheba. And then all of a sudden, you're held up in some city and Sheba has an army mad at him. How committed are you now to Sheba? Those are questions you need to ask, right?
You've been listening to A Kingdom Shaken, Part 2, on Walk in Truth. That was Pastor Michael's teaching in 2 Samuel, Chapter 20. You can email Pastor Michael with questions or prayer requests at contact@walkintruth.com. Now here's Pastor Michael with a final word.
Well, I think we'd all have to admit that when conflict arises, we can get emotional. And we can respond emotionally instead of, you know, hearing really and going to God's wisdom, we could do that old knee-jerk reaction where we just, you know, we get defensive. You know, we hear someone critique us or say something that we don't necessarily like. And the number one response is defensiveness. And that's not good because nobody's above critique, right? And even if we don't think that what that person is saying is sound, we can at least hear. You know, I've noticed with a lot of things, I could probably pull something out of a critique, even if I felt 95% of it was wrong. I could ask myself, well, can I learn something from that part of it or that piece of it? I think David's been a good example of that, at least at some points in his life. And I think that's the example that we want to be as well. Is I heard a brother say, I think this was Michael W. Smith, being interviewed recently. He said, I'm trying to get to a point in my life where I become unoffendable. Wow. Where I become unoffendable. Now, he didn't say he was there, but he said it's a goal. Have you ever had that on your goal list? I want to get to a point in my life where I'm unoffendable. Wow. You know, I think you'd have to be at a point where it's not about you anymore. And that's a hard place to be. But what a good place to be. Wouldn't that set you apart? If people saw you as really someone that was unoffendable, because you're not trying to necessarily, you know, be defensive or do anything over the top. You're just being who you are. Boy, that's a tough one. It really struck me, but it's something to think about, isn't it? And it's a good way to navigate life, making it about God and others as much as possible. This is Walk in Truth. If you're new to us, I'm Pastor Michael Lance, and the ministry Walk in Truth is backed by a church called Living Truth Christian Fellowship in the city of Corona. Hey, if you go to walkintruth.com, you can check out the church behind the ministry. You can find out how to become a monthly partner, clicking on the donate tab. You can learn a little bit more about who we are and why we're doing what we're doing here, teaching through the Word of God, podcasting and on radio stations, and become a Walk in Truth partner. We could use many more. We have opportunities. We'd like to walk through many open doors, but we need more partners. So check it out. It's walkintruth.com. Check it out today, and we'll catch you right here tomorrow.
Walk in Truth is a listener-supported ministry. Your financial partnership helps us broadcast on this station and provide the podcast for free. Also, more people like you can dive deeper into the Word of God and apply it to their life. Please consider becoming a Walk in Truth monthly partner of at least $5 a month, or give a one-time gift. Please visit walkintruth.com to give. And join us tomorrow for part 3 of A Kingdom Shaken. I'm Mike Massaro. Thanks for listening to Walk in Truth, where it's our goal to equip you to reach out with God's truth to all people.